John Harry Turan, you are a wealth of information, and pardon the pun because we're talking about wealth, but you have got so much information about the metaphysics of money. It's you're making us very wealthy listeners, and I'd like to hear some more examples about what you're talking about. Can you give us some more examples to fill us in a little more on what's going on with money?
Okay, let me tell you a little story again. I love to tell stories, as you may have figured, Steve, because stories teach. Stories, we learn from stories. They're one of the most powerful ways of teaching. And this one had to do with the great Richard Bach, one of my favorite of all people on earth. And I had mentioned before that some of our conversations were stranger than things we wrote in books. Not only that, they were very learningful. I learned a lot of stuff from him. And I remember this one day, I don't know if I was doing an interview with him or I was just chit-chatting, but the thing about money came up. And for those of you who don't know or know of Richard Bach, he is a world-famous author, and he did something that was so fantastic. He wrote a little book called Jonathan Livingston Seagull that came out sometime in the 70s, and that book went all around the world and made him very, very wealthy. And he told the story in some places, he has it written in books, of how he was like down to the last noodle in the box, didn't know where his meal was going to come from. And he was walking on this beach one day, or near some water, and he heard the words, Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And he said, it's kind of scary when it's dark and you don't see anybody around you, but out of this darkness comes a statement like this, Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He had never heard that before. And he thought about it, and he had this urge to go back to his little room. And he got there, and then all of a sudden, this entire story started to get into his mind as if you were watching a giant movie screen. And he wrote this story called Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And he got to a certain part, and the story stopped dead. Did not finish it for 8 years. But after a while, it was done, and here's the funny thing that happened. He could have given up and said, what's this stupid thing about a seagull talking? But no, he sent it out to different publishers. He had published before, so you'd really think that they'd like his stuff, and they all returned it and said, nice, cute little story, but this isn't for us. Could you try another press, please? And he went through this. In fact, he sent it to a company, and many people listening would know there was a company called Macmillan Publishing. And he sent it to Macmillan, and it came back. It was rejected. And he went to the mailbox, opened it. That was the 17th or 18th rejection he had. And any normal person might have given up by now. And as he pulled it out, he looked at it, and then he looked at a letter that came from the same company, Macmillan. And he's got on one hand the rejection, and here another hand, on the other hand, a letter. He opened it, and it said, Richard, my name is so-and-so. I have read some of your stuff, and I like it. Do you happen to have a manuscript that hasn't been published yet? Now, think of it. The lady's name was Elena Frieda. I knew her. Think of it. On one hand is this rejection from this company. On the other hand, it's a letter from one of the editors from that company saying, do you have something that you haven't published yet? He looked at the one hand, he looked at the other, he rushed in, wrote a note, sent it to Elena Frieda, and that book put Richard Bach, the rejected author, on the cover of Time magazine. Now, with all I do, and with all Foster did, I have never seen any of us, including my friend, the late Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, on the... She really deserved to get there, but I've never seen her on the cover of Time magazine. Richard Bach got on the cover of Time magazine because of this little book. He became very wealthy, because we're talking about wealth, but I needed to set that background before I tell you the next things. Well, here's what happened. He became very, very wealthy, and then he blew it all. At one point, he had a whole bunch of airplanes because he loved to fly. and love to do all kinds of stuff. And I think whether it's a million or two or 10, we all know that doesn't go too far these days. That's a fallacy again. But just to be funny, you know, this is a serious matter. I want it to be a little funny. Sorry, guys. You're supposed to laugh at this point. But anyway, he lost it all, okay? And the IRS came and hauled away his little trailer and so forth, and all his planes were taken. And so I thought, if anybody knew, of course, that wasn't the end of the story, else I wouldn't have told it. Let me tell you the end of the story. He wrote another book called Bridge Across Forever, and that took him out of the poverty, and he did extremely well. So one day I'm sitting with Richard, or I'm talking to him on the phone, I don't remember which, and I said, "You know, Richard, you know a lot about money. You've made a lot, you've lost a lot, you've been rich, and you've been poor. Can you tell me what is it about money, and how does one acquire it?" Now, I want you to listen very carefully, friends, to what I'm going to say. He said to me, he says, "John, it's simple." He says, "Hurl." Listen to that word. I love it. He says, "Hurl yourself at the thing you love, and all obstacles will disappear, and you'll get to the point where you are doing the greatest service, or you're fulfilling the purpose you came here for. And when you do that, money would not be a problem because it will flow to you because now you're focused on service." Huh. That's it. But think about it. Think about it. That's another example that if we really do the thing we love with the spirit of doing the thing we love, I think there will come to us all good things. Now, there was a book written, I don't remember how long ago, maybe about 10 or 20 years, called Do the Thing You Love and the Money Will Follow. And this, again, although it's a brilliant, brilliant title and it had some fantastic ideas, it's not the book I have a problem with. It's the people who read the book, just like those who read the book called The Secret today, and they're studying the law of attraction, but they are not putting it to use. They are not using the things that were taught. They know what the law of attraction is. They know that it's supposed to work when you think and you feel and whatnot. But all they're doing is they're sitting down and they say, "I'm going to attract this money. I'm going to attract this money. I'm going to get it." I mean, I've gotten letters from people who say, "I've been using the law of attraction to win the lottery. It's a good size one, John. It's $20 million. And the law of attraction is going to bring it to me." Well, you know what? You're setting yourself up for failure, not because the law of attraction can't bring you money, but because as you do that, there's a part of you deep within that's saying, "What are you doing? Why are you kidding yourself? Why are you short-circuiting yourself? You know you don't believe that. You are just hoping it would happen, but you don't have the faith and the belief behind it." See where I'm going with that? You've got to really trust that you are in a safe universe, that all the money you need is there. I mean, tell me this, those people who are religious in any religion, any language, anything, God's great, right? I know there's some who don't believe God's around, or there is a God. That's okay too. We'll excuse you from this little question. But those of you who believe that would say, "Yeah, God's great." So my next question is, if you believe that, do you think God can do anything? I mean, like anything? Calm a storm? Get rid of mountains? I mean, cause airplanes that should have fallen out of the sky to keep flying? Do you think God could really, really do anything? Do you think God could give me $10 if I wanted it? And the answer would be, of course. How about $20? Oh, definitely. Don't be ridiculous, John. God can give you $20, $30, $40 anytime. Notice what I'm going to say next. How about $1,000? Oh, sure, no problem. Okay. Would God give me $1 million? And they would hesitate for a while. And they'd say, "Of course, John would give, God would give you $1 million, John." And I'd have to say to them, "But I did ask for it and he didn't give it to me." How do you explain that? Again, we look to God as the solver of all of our problems. If there was a God who did that, solved every little problem, it would be for those of you who are parents. If you had a little kid, you would do everything for this child, and when the child got to be about 10 or 11, you'd be tying his shoelaces, you'd be brushing his teeth for him, because you needed to do everything for him. You are not doing that for the kid, you're doing it for yourself. So when you start putting the problem, I asked God for this and God didn't give me the money and I know it. God knows that I have a terrible need. No, that's not where we have to go. And please, if you do believe in a God, don't pick a fight with God. You're going to lose. You know why? Because God's God. Pick a fight with anyone else. Maybe with you, to see why you're thinking this way. God's God. Let God be God. You be you and use the gifts you were given. The gift of getting quiet within you and see that you deserve all the wealth you can ever handle. All the wealth you can use. Enough. Whatever enough is. If enough means a salary or an earnings of $20,000 a year, you will get that. If it means like a $50,000 or a $100,000, or if you need, like some of my friends, oh gee, I only made $1,500,000 this year. I really should have made two, which goes back to the first thing you said, Steve. Those who don't have want. Those who have a little want more, and those who have a lot still want more. So let's not look at it that way, but let's look at it this way, that everything we want, where money is concerned, is right there. And the thing that's separating us from that wealth is our belief about wealth, our getting angry at those or envious of those who have a lot of it, and our feeling bad about those who don't have much, thinking they're lazy bums. Look at that one there. He can't afford to buy a new car. He has that 1991 car and can hardly feed his family. So why did he have three kids? But me, I'm virtuous, they say to themselves. Me, I only have two kids, and I have a 2005 or whatever car, or a brand new car. But look at that poor guy over there. He's terrible. Look at that rich one there. He's bad. It's a perception.
John, very well put. And, you know, one of the things that comes up for me is the concept of sabotage. When I work in my hypnotherapy office with clients, they many times will come to me and they want to make more money. They're perhaps salespeople, or they just have a job that's not a sales job, and they want to make more money. They want to increase their income. And when you think about it, it's kind of like losing weight. All you have to do is take in fewer calories and burn more, and you lose weight. Simple formula. Just like wealth, all you really have to do is look at what a rich person does and do exactly what they do, and you'll get wealthy. The challenge comes in when people start to sabotage themselves because they don't feel worthy. And so they start to undo what they do. They get a little bit of money and they blow it in Las Vegas or Atlantic City. Just like when they start to lose a little bit of weight, they start to binge eat to gain it back. So can you talk a little bit about that, about sabotage and how people can metaphysically overcome that so that they can become wealthy?
Yes, yes, that's very, very brilliantly put. Because what they do is they self-destruct. They self-destruct. I do that by giving another example right now of this guy who consulted with me years ago. I remember this because I had just started to talk to people about their problems and how they could deal with them and what I thought was the way about for going about solving some of these problems, whether money or relationships or whatever. And this guy was a very powerful man in a corporation. He used to make a lot of money. He used to sign contracts for millions of dollars for his company. He made his company a lot of money. He knew the business inside out. And then one day he kept thinking, I have all these contacts. What would it be? How would it be if I were to set up my own business and get some of these very customers and do it and make 10 to 100 times what I make in my salary, which was very good, at this company I'm working for? So one day, you know, very successful guy, their top man, he quit and he went into business for himself. At first, everything seems to be going fine or will go fine. And his friends and old customers say, sure, we're going to come with you and whatnot. But nothing really happened. He would set up a deal, negotiate it, and get to the point where he is just about ready to sign the contract on a multi-million dollar deal. And time again, in one measly split second, one stupid moment, he blows it all. And this happened not once, not twice, but kept happening for quite a while until he is wondering, why did I ever leave that company? I don't know what the problem is, but it certainly doesn't have to do with my abilities. I'm able to get these people to the point of closing them, but whenever I get there, I couldn't do it for myself, but I did it for my company. Well, when you look at this, okay, when I explained to him what I thought was happening, that he didn't feel guilty about doing it for his company. In fact, it was fun because it was a job, but when he was doing it for himself, he had all those beliefs about, you know, maybe this isn't a good thing. This could make me rich, and rich is bad. See, we go back to that thing again. Now, when we're dealing with that, touching on the question you asked me a few minutes ago, Steve, their problem isn't a money problem. See, their problem is a self-esteem problem. They do not believe in themselves. They think they are unworthy of these things. They feel they deserve to be punished for something, a crime they never even committed. And so they short-circuit themselves. They sabotage themselves every time they get to the point of being successful. And it's not only this one case. I see it over and over again. And I saw it in me in my younger days until I realized, and of course, I was blessed in meeting some of the people. You know, I believe an association is who you hang with at times, who you run with, and you can learn so much from them. And I learned, oh my goodness, that's what I was doing. I was just sabotaging myself, and I changed my belief. So their problem isn't a problem of working hard. Many of these poor people, or barely making it people, are wonderful folks. They work hard, they love their families, they love their neighbors, they pay their taxes, they do all the good things, and yet they're broke. And it's not because of who they are, it's because of who they think they are. You see, they're two different things. And they think deep down within them, in the privacy, that little private spot where only they can get in, they think of their inadequacy and that they don't think they can do this. Oh, look at this guy. Oh, my goodness. I mean, in the internet marketplace, there are a whole bunch of young guys in their 20s and 30s and 40s who have made fantastic fortunes. I wouldn't doubt that you know a number of them. Steve, these fellows, and they are no different from a lot of people. They like the same things. They can only wear one pair of shoes at a time. They can only drive one car at a time. They can only eat one meal at a time. But they have a lot of money. And contrary to popular opinion, I know some of them very well, and some of them are very, very good friends. And I'll tell you, they're not bad. They do lots of good things. They give their money to causes that you wouldn't believe. In fact, once a few years ago, somebody I knew was going to get kicked out of his house, and he and his kids were going to have to live under a bridge, and it was going to be pretty close to Christmas time. And I called up a few of these rich people, and I said, look, we got to get $5,000 to $10,000 for this guy so that he and his family can go through and have a good Christmas. No questions asked. All they say asked me is, where do we send it? And a few of them just put together the money, sent it to help that family out, who to this day have no idea where it came from. So it's not the money or the lack of money. It's the self-esteem or the lack of self-esteem. It's the not believing in who you are or the believing the wrong things in who you are. I hope that makes it a little clearer that it's not the money. The money is the effect. These are the things that are the cause. You got to go back to your beliefs. Examine yourself. Think, why am I poor? Well, nobody ever gave me a chance. Who do you want to give you a chance? You should give yourself a chance. Look at what you love to do. If you're a painter and you have a desire to fix cars, well, do something and fix cars. If you enjoy it, you'd be well off. I have a brother who went to school, got his degrees, did very well, worked for major companies, and quit after about a year, 2 years, or 3 years. And then he always loved fixing cars. He loved to take them apart. This guy could listen to a car and tell you what's wrong with it. Me, I knew very little and still know very little about a car. I know that under the hood, there's a thing called a battery. I think it has a battery. And there's an engine there. He knew every part of it. He left his Fortune 500 company's job as a young man, I think in his late 20s, and got into fixing cars. Never worked for anybody again in this lifetime, expanded into other things, and he finally said, I've done enough, and he ate well, and he owns things they don't own him, and he's happy. He was doing what he wanted. I sat back as his brother and said, you know, what is this guy doing? I mean, he went to college, he got these degrees, and now this is what he's doing? He got himself a car lot. He was a car salesman, his own. That's what he loved to do. That's not what I like to do. I'm doing the stuff I like. I didn't always do the stuff I like. So again, to summarize this part, I think examine yourself. You want to become rich, don't go after the money right away. Sit down, take a few hours, take a week, examine in your mind, what are your talents? What do you believe in? If your beliefs are telling you are not worthy of doing things, and there are lots of programming out there that could tell you why you shouldn't be rich. I mean, being born in a poor community might do that. There are exceptions to everything, of course. Having people around you who've been always poor and tell you, you got to work hard. If you don't work hard, you're not going to succeed. I discovered that years ago that was a total fallacy, that I didn't have to work hard. I just had to work with joy and understanding and to find the things I really like to do. Focus on that and give your gifts to the world. Another thing I wanted to tell you concerning Richard Bach, when he said, and I hope everybody remember this, hurl yourself at the thing you love, and all the obstacles will disappear. And then in another conversation, I asked him again about wealth. And he says, you know, here it is. Because he answered in very simple terms. It says, give your best gift to the world, and the world would reward you by sending you money. That's a puzzling thing, I thought. Give your gift to the world. What kind of gift do I have to give to the world? And the world would send me money. I said, what do you mean? That's it? He says, let me explain. He says, when we were broke, didn't know what to do, after we had made lots of money and lost it all of a sudden I got to writing again, and then out came this book. This was from Our Soul, he and his wife, and it was called Bridge Across Forever. And this was after Illusions, by the way. It's called Bridge Across Forever. And we gave it to the world through our publisher, who printed it, distributed it, and guess what? People loved it. And they rewarded us by buying my book, and I became wealthy again. I became successful again.
I think that's very, very powerful, John. And you know, as you talk, I'm reminded of my good friend, Frank Mangano, a friend of both of ours. And Frank had a job that he didn't really care for, and he found his passion in helping his parents. His parents had some health challenges, and he started researching that. Now he's known throughout the world as the guy to go to for natural health information. But all of that started just from a passion of wanting to be a good son, wanting to help out. And so his story, the story of his life, the successful part of it, chapter one started the moment he started doing what he liked to do. And he left the job that he didn't care for and embraced instead a career. So I think that serves as an example, just as there are many examples in the world of people who just finally step into their greatness and start doing what they're supposed to be doing. So I appreciate you reminding us of the focus on service and the focus on doing what we love, and how that can actually set us financially free.
And that's why Frank, who is a mutual friend of ours, and you are doing okay. I don't think either of you guys have to worry where the next meal is coming from tomorrow. But that's if you had been doing something else. You may have had to worry about that. But you see how the universe takes care of you? How everything
Absolutely.
Works out the way the laws say, the universal laws. So I'm glad I had a chance to talk about this a little. And you have any questions for me?
Oh my goodness, the questions could go on all day. You know, one of the things I wanted you to touch on before we wrap up, and that is the concept of guilt being associated with money. I think that that is such a big one for people, such a powerful roadblock for so many people. I'd like you to, as we wrap up in the last few minutes here, just to end on that note, to give everyone something that they can take home and take to heart and really will help them push through the barriers they've put up in terms of feeling guilty about having money.
Okay, good. I'm glad we'll end with that because that, I think, is the crux of the matter. I think right within that little spot is the solution for this. The first thing they have to do is to examine themselves and what they believe about money. And just write them down. Get a yellow pad and draw a line from top to bottom, halfway from the edges of the page. And on one side, write my beliefs about money on one column. And in the next column, you write, why do I believe that? And then they'll write just what comes to mind, okay? Because this is how you're going to erase the guilt and all the nonsense and the hypnotism most people have gone through since they were born. And on the first side, they might write, money is very difficult to get because I've been working so hard for 30 or 40 or whatever years and I never got enough. So I believe that money is difficult to get. So you go over to the other side and you write now the reasons why you think so. Well, it's obvious, John, they're right. It's obvious. I think so because I don't have much. Now, that's not a reason, but that's a reinforcement of the real reason. Okay, they'll go down and say, well, I don't have a college degree, and that's why. Well, you know what? Look around you. Use logic. Use your mind in this. Analyze it at first. Don't do it with feelings, because then you're going to start making mistakes. And this one, there are lots of things you got to do with feelings. This one, you just look dispassionately in it. And he'll say, well, okay, I didn't have a great education. Then think about it. There are people with PhDs that they showed on TV who are standing by the side of the road with a sign saying, we'll work for food. In this economy, in this time, there are many, many people who are so well qualified and they just don't have jobs. So it's not true that your college degree is preventing you from that. I always say, I have a lot of degrees, but you know what I do with them? I put them in the bathroom under glass. And I write, break in case of emergency, because it's not the degree that makes you successful. It's you who bring meaning to the degree. So get rid of that. Notice you put two reasons down. You might get to the third one. Yeah, it's hard to get money. And I know this because since I was young, I always saw my mom and my dad working from morning till night, barely enough to feed us kids. And they're always working and working and working. And we never had enough. And we take a little vacation every year, but where would we go? We drive the 2 hours to the beach and we'll stay there for a couple of days because we couldn't afford a hotel. And we'd come back and we have that little plastic swimming pool in the backyard. And the other kids would come. See, this is one of the things that they're saying as a reason for being poor. So when I saw my dad and mom not working so hard and not getting on in life where money is concerned, of course, as a little fella, and as you grew up, it'll be in your mind that money's hard to get. If you believe it's hard to get, it's not going to come to you. You have to start saying, okay, now I know why I believe that, and I am not my beliefs. I only have them. So my beliefs don't control me. I can manage them. So I can get rid of that belief by substituting another one, like I deserve all there is, until you feel it. And notice what would happen. That feeling of guilt and that feeling of being trapped because of lack of funds will start disappearing, and a few magical, mystical things will start coming to you. You'll notice that no, you didn't win the $20 million lottery, and you didn't have to because that would probably have made it worse a couple of years later. Although you don't believe that right now, there are a lot of people who did that. And what would occur is a little sign here and there. You see, somebody sends you a check for $542.20 in the mail, and it's somebody you last saw about 10 years or 15 years ago. And you're curious, why did I get this? Oh, yeah, I remember him. Here's an address I'm going to write. Here's an email. I'm going to send an email and ask him why he did that. And back came the answer. When things were really, really bad with me, I needed to borrow $100 from you, and you didn't seem to have a lot, but you gave it to me, and you told me don't ever worry about it. And now I'm doing much better, and that's your $100 plus the interest and a big thank you. And you sit back and you say, holy cow. Some people would say holy other things, but say holy cow. That is amazing, but it's not amazing because it's the law. You don't say gravity is amazing when you walk and you stand upright, or you're sleeping, or you stub your toe against a rock. You know that gravity just is. The law is just is. So don't look at money. Look away from money and look at your values. What do you think about money? Why do you believe that about money? How much do you think about you and your worth? Because you will only be paid by what you're worth. There was this guy, the salesman. This is a true story, and I don't remember where I heard it or read it, but I'm going to tell it from memory. There's this guy who was working for this really, really large company, and he was a salesman. And he'd go out and he will try to sell. They hired him because they thought he was really sharp and he was good and the interview was great. And he's a nice young man with a young family just starting out in his career in life. But he showed very good promise as a salesperson. So this company, this big successful company, hired him and they gave him his little territory to go sell their widgets there, market to these people in this territory. And so he started, and he tried, and he ended up making $25,000 a year. Now, what he discovered was that this was a territory, or what his bosses said, this is a territory where the average person earns $75,000 to $100,000 a year. And this new guy, good as he is, only did $25,000 a year. So they had a little talk, among themselves and wondered, he's such a nice guy. Maybe he needed a little bit more training. So they gave him some training, put him with one of the more experienced salespeople, and went through it again. And the following year, still, he made $15,000 a year or $25,000 a year. And finally, they decided that they're going to call him and talk to him. And they called, talked to him, and said, look, you were in the best part of the business. You were in this very prosperous district, and you should have at least have made the worst $50,000. Tell you what we'll do. We'll transfer you over to another district and see how you do there. So they didn't tell him what the other district was going to be, and they put him in this district, which happened to be a very poor performing level, at a very poor performing level, where people earned, the salesmen there or salespeople there earned only $10,000 to $15,000 a year. So after the first year, his sales were, you guessed it, $25,000, thereabouts. He did better than every salesperson in that territory. And in the one where the average was $100,000 or $75,000, he did worse than all of them. You see, the problem was, and is with all of us, he was a $25,000 man. He wasn't $100,000. He couldn't think in those large terms. And even when they put him in the worst position, he still did the amount he was programmed to do in his mind. And so, my dear friends, whenever you think about money, think that money is energy. It flows. You give service, and you give service by dedicating your time and your efforts to that which you love, whether it be writing a book, painting a picture, having a used car lot, driving a truck, or just selling fast food. I knew a guy who died in his 70s, very well qualified guy, but he never wanted to be tied down to a job. So he traveled the world and he ended up earning a little bit of money by working in a McDonald's, a Burger King, whatever these, Wendy's and so forth. They got enough money, moved up to almost manager and quit and went on. He lived a happy life every once in a while, I think. You know, he passed away a few years ago. You know, that guy was so fortunate. He just enjoyed life. He always smiled. He always had a good word for people. And he was happy. So money doesn't make you happy. In fact, there are many, many times it would make you very sad and empty. You would end up having everything to live with and nothing to live for. So go after the thing that's really of value to you, where you give service to the world and to those around you. And finally, associate with successful people. Because when you do that, could not help but pick up some of the vibrations and some of the thoughts of their being successful, and it'll, like they say, it'll rub off on you. I hope this has been something that everybody enjoyed and will look at again and again, or listen to again and again.
John, it's been tremendous. I mean, learning that money is God in action, it's a symbol, it's a flow of energy, that it flows like electricity, and just hearing your money secrets, and most importantly for me, learning the idea that we need to focus on service and we need to do what we love. And that's really what's going to start it all for us. So, John, I want to thank you for the wealth, again, of information that you've shared with us.
It was my pleasure, Steve. And thank you and see you next time.
I look forward to it. On behalf of myself, Steve G. Jones, and my good friend here, John Harry Charan, we wish you an abundant life.